This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. I think it's safe to say that Rockingham County's Steve White has spent his life observing things. I mean, the man did work at the Central Intelligence Agency for 21 years. While at the CIA, Steve developed a passion for birdwatching, which he now practices amidst the brush of his Singer's Glen farm. So how does a CIA specialist become an avid birdwatcher?
Birdwatching probably began with my goddess of a grandma, Gladys Green, at the dining room table in the house on Twin Lakes in Ohio, and she would set us boys down with an unfolder big Audubon picture book and look out the window at the bird feeder, and she would say, "This is what we're looking at out there right now." That seed lay dormant for many, many years. It really kicked in after Susan and I had bought our little farmhouse in Singer's Glen. And almost immediately, the next season, I suddenly saw my first indigo bunting and a whole host of birds that I had no idea what they were. And I said, "All right, Steve, you've got to be more aware of your surroundings than this." And I got a few bird books, and I started looking at it. And the last thing a birder undertakes as he becomes serious is warblers. There are 60-some species and an enormous amount of variation, not only among species, but depending on what time of year, whether they're in breeding plumage or not, or whether they're first-year hatchling or a veteran of several migrations, there's an enormous amount of difference. So, but that's when it actually began and when Grandma Green's seed sprouted.
When I was talking with intern extraordinaire Steve Niss about your coming, I was telling him who you were, and I said, "I like that disconnect." And Steve said, "It's not a disconnect."
Yeah. Observation.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Actually, many of my colleagues in the Directorate of Intelligence at CIA were bird watchers, including Schlesinger, a former director of ours, and he would lead popular bird walks in and around the CIA. We often would take off at lunch, and there is a nice 2 or so mile meandering track through the woods around our campus or compound there, and I would frequently go. Noontime is not the best time. A lot of birds are taking a break, but if you go there later in the day, if you had, say, a piece of analysis that was up on the seventh floor ready to be processed and you were waiting to get word from the staff up there, you would have a 45-minute to an hour period, and you would just say, "Hey, pick up the phone. Ruth, would you like to come out and make the rounds and see what we can find around 4 in the afternoon?" So it was quite common. The CIA was an interesting mix of all kinds of different interests and talents, both professional and amateur and that sort of thing. But bird watching was by no means rare.
I know other bird watchers, and they go on walks, and maybe they keep a life list. But I want you to talk a little bit more about this connection, I think, in you between what you did for a living for a long time and then how you go about watching birds with real interest in patterns and habits and what those patterns and habits mean? Or am I really reaching here?
I'll try. I think I'm a citizen of the globe first, I think, and maybe the United States second. And, I'm a former Buckeye, so I follow the football team up there. And as the loyalties cascade down, the interest in life in general and political life, natural life, our position as humans in the world, as conservatives would probably call it, husbandry of the garden we have inherited here. I kind of view myself more as a co-inhabitant along with the warblers and the great blue heron and the robins and blue jays and so forth. If there is a kind of a blend there, I guess I would say it's a logical extension of my concern for world politics and humanity. So it seems to me to be of a package. In any case, it's me. I had some of my greatest time. I'm a linguist. The Navy bless them, came along and told me to stop beating my head against a biology major and to learn Russian. And I dutifully did, and I'm glad I did. It was quite a change in my life. It at one point got me overseas into Russia as part of the inspection regime on the Intermediate Range Nuclear Force Missile Treaty. And I got to see Votkinsk, Russia, the site of a huge missile production facility, way out of the way of any most Western tourists. The avian fauna was fascinating there, and I had the good fortune to grab a book that I had bought and take it along by Vladimir Flint called Birds of the USSR. And it was not only an excellent guide to what I was seeing there, which was totally exotic, but it was a major contact point between me and my Soviet escorts on this regime. They had never seen a publication this interesting and slick. And I said, well, it's really one of yours. You have to talk to your people at Goss Lit about the size of the press run that you produce these things in, because I know this would sell like hotcakes here. But we would sit there on mid-watches, and they would look over my shoulder as I flipped through the pages. And in Russian, word stress is not at all intuitive, so I benefited from them. They would tell me where the word stress is in such and such a common name in Russian, and we spent many pleasant hours going over this thing that to them was exotic. I have had the luck of traveling also in my professional career to Japan, Korea, Soviet Central Asia, Hawaii, and a number of places where, for some reason, the first thing I do in leisure time there is let me go around and take a look at whatever birds I can find here.
Why?
Goodness, I don't know why. This interest, as I say, had rekindled in about 93 or 94, mm-hmm. when we let our brush and the farm here grow up, and it suddenly translated into a fascination for the astounding variety, 6,000 or 7,000 different bird species in the world, and most bird watchers consider themselves lucky if their life lists get up into the upper hundreds. There are, of course, fanatics who shoot for, in fact, there's a book by the title of something along the lines of Seeing Every Bird in the World, and it gets quite competitive at that level. But I don't know, for me, it's more just an aesthetic experience and a way of communing with the natural world, and I guess I don't know how else really to explain it. Wherever I am, I will always be fascinated to see what different birds I can find. In Hawaii, to my frustration, I had not had the good fortune of bringing a guide along to the birds of Hawaii, so I thought, okay, well, I'll just buy one there. I went to the university bookstore. No such thing. I was a little shocked. I went to the biggest bookstore in Honolulu, allegedly. No, we don't have anything really on the birds of Hawaii. So I made a fairly long list with all the... By that time, I had become somewhat accomplished at describing what I had seen in terms of the diagnostics of a bird that you want to take back if you don't have a guide right with you at the time. And I came back to Washington, D.C., and sure enough, on Wisconsin Avenue in Georgetown at the Audubon Bookstore, Birds of Hawaii. And I bought it belatedly. But I have leafed through it since then and made identifications of most of the birds I managed to see while I was there.
When you were talking about the birds in Hawaii, and you said you've gotten skilled at describing them, can you give me a typical description that would be useful to you as someone who knows what they're doing?
Well, most, even rank amateur birders, the ones that can tell the difference between a titmouse and, say, a Bohemian waxwing, know to look for color and patterns. Beyond that, you get into silhouette. More accomplished birders can look up at a bird flying overhead with the sun behind it and say, no, that is a broad-winged hawk. That is, on the other hand, a turkey vulture, that sort of thing. With the warblers, you get into really fine detail on all sorts of little diagnostic features of a bird, because the warblers basically are all of a similar size. They're a small, generally woodland bird. But if you look at beak size, length, and pattern, some, for example, the Cape May warbler will have a down curve on the upper part of the beak. And then you look at patterns. Warblers to me, divide into those with an eye ring or and those without an eye ring. The latter mostly have an eye stripe through. Some of them have nothing at all. A yellow warbler, for example, has a black eye that just sticks out in, amidst this sea of yellow. The underside of the tail on warblers is another diagnostic. Wing bars are something you look for.
In warblers.
In warblers, yes, and other birds as well. I've gotten relatively, for an amateur who puts no more time into it than I do, and there are club members that that's all they do, eat, sleep, and bird, as the T-shirt says, I do pretty well now with sighting birds at a very long distance away. A mockingbird you can see 100 yards away because as it comes in to land, it spreads its wings and you see the typical pocket handkerchief or the checkered feature on its wings. Over time, and with a proclivity toward making observations, I think anyone can pretty much pick up the skill of telling birds at a distance that would astonish people that aren't interested in birds at all.
Birds are beautiful.
Yes.
They hop around. They cheer our heart. What is it in you that needs to be able to name them, needs to be able to say, well, that's not just a couple of cute birds, but that is a yellow warbler and a whatever.
Reminds me of a friend of mine up in Cape Cod who makes fun of my need to know. He says, I went out this morning and I saw 42 LGBs and 52 LGGs. And what do I think they stood for? Little brown birds and little gray birds. I don't know. I suppose my need to classify makes perhaps my lack of keeping a life list even more astonishing, but I do need to know what I'm looking at. As I say, I started out very young as a naturalist, and a cousin of mine and I tromped every square inch of Portage County, Ohio, in search of critters and snakes. And at one point, I branched out into botany. I had a very good undergraduate course in dendrology at Oberlin College, and you look at flowers. I absorbed this, I know, from my grandmother and to some extent from my mom and my dad, who also, we spent summers on Nantucket Island, and a great deal of time was spent, as the Nantucketers call it, random scooting around the moors in our old Buick, and invariably someone in the back seat, Dad would be driving, someone in the back would say, stop, back up. Sure enough, we would back up. There would be a Lilium philadelphicum or a Leotris or a Gerardia, an increasingly rare, beautiful pink slipper-shaped flower, or even a golden garden spider catching bugs or what have you. So this kind of thing rubs off on a young, impressionable guy like me, and I've always wanted to know what it is I'm looking at if it's in the natural world.
Retired CIA Russian specialist Steve White does his organized birding with the Rockingham Bird Club, which he says is always glad to welcome new members. You'll find a link to the Rockingham Bird Club on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Back after a break to talk with playwright Matthew Minichino.